Christina there by the wilderness, and we're talking the wilderness today on Sky's the Limit. Sky's the Limit usually starts at 6, so this is when many people might be tuning in, actually. But we're talking the wilderness today. We're joined by Nick. If you're joining us now and you're like, who is that man?
Hello, I am that man.
Our next track that we have to talk about is, we're going back a bit, we're backpedaling all the way back to 2020, your debut album, Until Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
And Abby really wants to talk about Where I Roam.
Great. I love this tune.
Okay. I also love it. I love it when you perform it live and you captivate the audience. And I love listening to this one as well. I bought the CD.
Can I interject quickly? This is the song when we saw you at the Isabel that convinced me that you were something special.
Oh, thank you. Wow.
This is the song.
Nice. Okay.
That stood out to me. Remember?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Because Abby was like, what'd you think? And I was like, I like the one
you
with
did.
The bass.
You did, yes. Yeah.
Anyways.
But yeah, we had the Until Tomorrow CD, me and Olivia in our apartment, and we played it all the time. We both loved this one. But I just wanted to ask how this one came to be, because it's not completely different, but it does sound a little bit different. I want to know about the opening harmonies, if there was any sort of story into developing that, or if it just kind of happened. But yeah, if you'd be open to talking about this one.
Oh, I'm actually really glad you picked this tune for this question. And the reason is, so The Wilderness has been a band longer than I've been in it, even. I joined in 2018, okay. I suppose. Like I said, I absconded from my university commitments because these guys, I was roommates with Liam and Hank, and they were like, come on tour with us, quit your job. I'm like, ah, sure.
Whatever, man.
But they had a lot of tunes already, right?
Yeah.
And they wrote and recorded a record themselves before Until Tomorrow that I have tucked away somewhere that we largely refer to as a demo these days, that had a bunch of tunes on them. Some of them have yet to see the light of day ever and probably should not. But but Where I Roam was one of them, and it always sort of stuck out to my understanding before I joined the band. This is the other guys, I'm speaking from their experience. They were like, this one, we had a hard time making it click live. We're like, what can we do to really zhuzh this song up? And it was originally a lot more inspired by Ali Farka, and Sasha, our old guitar player, is really into a lot of North African guitar players and Middle Eastern music. And so it was a really different flavor of tune. And one day we tried busting it out of practice and we rearranged the hell out of it. We really, really dug deep and were what can we do to make this cool? One thing that happened a lot in early Wilderness songs is that everybody could kind of sing. I mean, Hank used to sing a bunch too. Now he's focusing more on playing drums because he's written incredibly cool and incredibly difficult drum parts. But we had a bunch of singers. I'm a trained music nerd. I can do the arranging. I did a lot of the arranging for the Isabel show. Hank also really helped. At that time, we were kind of just experimenting with stuff and seeing what stuck. And Until Tomorrow, as a record, I think, is kind of reflective of that, because there's all these tunes with different timbres. There's these tunes with different styles. We recorded it in a week and a bit, and we really were experimenting with a bunch of stuff. But that was the product of screwing around in the jam room. The thing you see us do live with the sticks, the whole that was sort of one of the important rhythms from the first version of the tune. And the stick thing just worked out. It was kind of a fun showy thing. And at one point we had just three different people doing sticks on stage. Because it was cool. It was good imagery. That tune, Jonas wrote the lyrics, to my understanding, about traveling and about feeling you're really not sure where you are and where home actually is. And we were trying to portray that imagery, right? You're thinking desert, you're thinking a tumbleweed and cacti. And one thing that I snuck in there, which is not the stick thing, is going into the sax solo. Dear listener, I implore you to listen for this. I play this one long tone that starts really quiet and then gets really loud. Have you noticed the panning on that? Have you noticed how it goes from one ear to the other ear?
I did.
Okay, see, you're my kind of nerd. That's me trying to be very literal about standing on the side of a highway and a transport truck rushing past you. It's supposed to sound like the Doppler effect and you feeling blown away in the wind by the truck we're describing in the beginning of the tune. It's a very literal interpretation of that. So I guess to answer your question, we just jammed stuff and we arranged it and we're like, oh, this will be cool. This will be cool. This will be cool. And then that's one of the ones that we walked into the studio actually knowing.
Right.
Yeah. And it was one of the first ones we recorded, and it stuck.
Wow, that's really cool to learn. And with your commentary about the panning for like a highway, I like the start too. You said everyone can sing, and you brought that in and kept that in, because to me, when I listen to it, and even seeing you do it live, it's sort of like you're picking up each person on the way a little bit as everyone joins in, and then it builds up into something.
That's what we talked about before, yeah.
But whether that was intentional or not, it kind of comes across that way, which I think fits with the theme a bit. So
that is a stellar observation. I just got chills. You need to give me more compliments.
We listened to a lot of Wilderness while driving, and in our last year of university, we did a lot of road trips.
Oh, great.
And we listened to a lot of just hit shuffle on Apple Music, The Wilderness.
Great.
And we've said before, Where I Roam is a good beginning of road trip song. When you're in Kingston and I'm going around everyone's apartments and picking them all up, this is what Where I Roam is you start the road trip with the...
That is such a neat observation, man.
But there you go. This is the fun, right? Because it's so cool. Like you're saying, it's cool to hear that, which I appreciate hearing that. But it's so cool for us to hear your perspective too, right? Because you never know where things go once you make them and how people interpret them.
Well, and this is the beauty of being a musician, especially being a musician in like a really well attended, I guess, and like well loved music scene, is that it's not a one-way conversation. Our shows are not supposed to be a one-way conversation. Like, we get to play this tune, sure, but you having that feeling about it is as much a part of the tune as ours. And I'm actually really, it's a privilege for me to hear that from you, you know? thank you for telling me about that.
Thank you for telling
all of the nerdy CFRC listeners who are going to go write music analysis papers for Dr. Walker after this about Where I Roam.
I think this is a good time for me to interject with my Abby and I see a lot of live music, like a lot, and not all of it is local. Like, I go to a lot of big venue shows, and the bands that I like the most are always bands where the live show becomes bigger than themselves,
right?
And I think that's a reason why, like, my other favorite bands, for example, are the 1975 and 21 Pilots.
Totally
amazing live shows. Top three bands, The Wilderness is the other three, the third one. Your live shows become something bigger than yourself. And me, I've seen The Wilderness 11 times now. You start to get in a rhythm of the things that you do live.
Like idiosyncrasies.
Liam's little da-da-da that he does.
Oh, yeah.
The claps, the tambourine throw.
Oh, that is the most nerve-wracking part of every show.
It's the sport portion.
If I drop the tambourine on either of these shows, my family will be cursed for generations, you guys.
But there's things of like...
I always say it's time to be athletic. You have to throw this.
But there's things of like, I put my thumb to the open road. There's like things, and we touch thumbs in Guelph. There's things that you learn.
It's so nice. I'm going to cry.
There's
or
things
yak.
That you learn, like seeing people over and over again, and you do fun little things on stage where every time I bring someone new to a Wilderness show, because I'll have this friend and I'll be like, you have to come see this band in Stouffville. I don't care if it's snowing. And I'm like, okay, are you ready? The claps are coming up. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you've got to do the claps, because I can tell from the people here, I've never seen any of them before, I don't trust them to start the claps, so I'm going to start the claps. And they're like, Skylar, you're insane. And I'm like, no, it's a thing, I promise. But it's fun when you have those little fan bits where it's rewarding for people to come see you over and over and over again, because they continue these fan things.
That's an integral part of music making. I will try not to yap too much about this before we play the tune, because I do not wish for the listener to forget our impeccable musicological analysis of this song. But I was listening somewhere about music and about the way that music was shared for so long. Like this same book, The Power Broker, they were describing Robert Moses and Al Smith, who was the governor of New York, first Irish governor of New York. He was governor from like 1920 something onwards. Mm-hmm. Just going to the pub after legislature every day and being like, all right, bud, sing us a tune, sit on the piano. Yeah. And like, music was a thing you shared, right? And you see this throughout history. Like, you can watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show by yourself at home,
right?
Or you can go to a public screening of it with a bunch of your buddies, and you can yell at the TV while you're watching.
That's a really good example.
You know what I mean? This is like a documented thing that happens, but it only happens when things are happening communally. Thomas King wrote in The Truth About Stories, he writes a lot about sharing stories communally instead of just reading them in like a little book by yourself, and that's what this is about, you know?
Yeah.
Yes,
exactly.
Don't forget the musical analysis. You've got to do it. We're expecting the essays in the mail.
I'll grade them.
Where I Roam.
She spoke to me as I walked out with her beneath my feet. I held my thumb to the open road and a truck pulls up with a hitch and tow. She asked me, boy, where do you wanna go? I told her about the place that I call my home. There's bus lanes and there's broken glass. Something in the water flowing from my tap. The needle in the gutter and the smell of gas. Where the stars don't shine and the earth is flat. Not a day goes by. Not a day goes by. Not a day goes by. Not a day goes by when I don't miss home. To me, and I'm losing count the nights I don't sleep. I'm on my own, but I don't feel free, 'cause these city streets just ain't the place for me. I miss the great green mountains and the big blue sky. Cicadas electric in the heat. The silhouettes dancing round the campfire light. The Milky Way illuminates all the darkest skies. Not a day goes by. Not a day goes by. Not a day goes by. Not a day goes by where a dome is home. Sip of sunshine and I let out a sigh. It's nice to take the time to watch the stars go by. I think back to the grass there on the other side. No matter where I roam, I'm never satisfied.
By The Wilderness. We're joined by Nick
from the wilderness, and Abby's going back into their enclosure in the other studio. The next song that we have to play and talk about here is You the Ocean.
Yeah.
I could yap about this song for hours and hours, and I have. I have to people I've with them in the car. I'm like, I'm going to play you this song and then I'm going to talk about it for the next 45 minutes. It is one of my favorite songs of yours, and I can't listen to it and not get emotional. It's just a lot about the song connects with me, but it is this is my controversial hot wilderness take.
Okay.
It is the best song that you perform live.
That is a bananas thing to say, but it's a high compliment. Thank you.
It is the best song that you perform live. It is. There's something about it that I think there's, and it's one of your least rock and roll songs.
Oh yeah, it is the ballad that we.
That's what I was gonna say. It's like the thing about it is we talk about this a lot on Sky's the Limit. I would not agree with you either, Skylar, but yeah. I love that you're sharing your opinion because it's good.
It is my favorite wilderness song to see live. There's something about it that every time I see it live, my whole body goes numb, and there's like a stillness in the audience when you perform it. It's the same thing of when you perform 25.
Yeah.
When you do perform 25, but that stillness that sort of captures everybody. And then that ending, Jonas's stage presence is also the best in this song. I like when he climbs things. the Carl's last show, the one in Market Square.
Yeah.
I was there for that. That was my favorite ever You the Ocean. Cause Jonas climbed in the fountain and he got his shoes wet and he said, "Oh, I got water on my suede shoes." And then during this really emotional song, I don't know. That's my wilderness hot take. This is my favorite song that to see you perform live.
That's a very high compliment, and I think it's important because both of the songs you mentioned are like the low point of the set, and I think it's easy for us as like the author or the performer or whatever to get self-conscious and be like, "Oh, we gotta have all bangers all the time," or people are gonna lose faith; they're not gonna pay attention. But the thing that is important about both of those two tunes. Is they're like really incredibly personal. 25 has a really personal story to Jonas. He tells it a lot better than I do.
Yeah.
And this is one I wrote relevantly enough on the topic of our last couple shows about like the inevitability of things falling apart. I wrote this one.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It's a love song through the lens of climate change.
Yeah.
I wrote it because I was experiencing dire, dire heartache and in a classic man singer songwriter thing to do, I wrote a ballad about it, but it really is about like the inevitability of everything falling apart. It was like what like the letter to like the ocean in question is like really begging for it to just be over, like mm-hmm. I don't want to sit here and wait as everything falls apart. I just want to be underwater by now and then I can be at peace is like kind of the tune. And I suppose I mentioned this. I think we're going to play this one live in the next 2 days. I'm really crossing my fingers. But it's, you know, it's relevant at the moment. It's complicated feelings this, complicated feelings that. It's a tune about the inevitability of change.
Yeah.
Do with that what you will, dear listener. You can ask me about all of the funny musical puzzles I baked into it later.
and maybe me saying my hot take about it being my favorite, knowing that I'm at the next two shows. Maybe you'll put in a little You the Ocean for dear old Skylar.
I have receipts. This will be on the archives. I will play it for my bandmates. All right?
No, I don't know. It's just incredible to see live. And I think I pair this song with 25 in my mind. And I know 25 is Jonas's song, so I won't like keep us on it too much, but my dad has become a very big fan of yours, and their first show was the Stouffville show, which is an interesting first wilderness show, and I came away from that show being like, okay, that was a wilderness show, not their best, but that was that. He was like, that was one of the most incredible shows that I've ever been to. I cannot believe that they played 25. And he was floored at Jonas's and your performance of 25. Anyways, it's these ballad songs that I think get a lot of the crowd. But because people are so still, I don't think that reception shows on stage. Anyways, You the Ocean.
I heard these days it's looking hard for you.
And you know I'm afraid of climate change. I used to call you mine like blackout butter sand. Now you're just crude to me these days. Above my shoulders, I want you deep down in my thirsty lungs. I think I'll settle down in a house in the beaches so you can swallow me when it floods. You, the ocean.
Ocean there, a little cry break for our our interview here with Nick from the Wilderness, but we're gonna keep the tears flowing.
Yeah, you
the next song
I'm shaking my head right now.
The next song that we have to talk about is none other than the Arboretum,
and we've moved on to Strangers I Used to Love album.
Yes.
Oh yeah,
we've moved on to Strangers I Used to Love.
Right, we're almost in like the modern day history of the Wilderness. This is nice.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just start.
God. Well, the problem is like, where does one start? I've talked about this tune a lot. So this is one that I wrote, I suppose. And the other guys like helped me compose. They helped write a lot of the parts around it, but I, you know, came up with the lyrics and the guitar part. And I tell this story on stage lots, as abridged as I can, but the tune is inspired by the place that I grew up in, which is Guelph, Ontario, and the University of Guelph runs an arboretum with trees from across the world. And the first time I ever went there, despite the fact that I grew up in Guelph, hilarious, I was like 25 or 26. It was like 2021. And in this arboretum, there's like this one memorial garden where all of the trees have names. And they're all names of people who passed away. And when I saw this, I was like, I felt like I had been torn asunder from the inside. I was like, that is the craziest thing I've ever seen. And I walked around this. I was there with the person who is now my wife. We were supposed to be on a date, and I was very distracted. I was like, oh my God, what must it be like to be one of those trees who is like lining the promenade of this place? And so the story of that tune is like, it kind of came from that moment, and it's, you know, it's like this interpretation of like what it would be like to be one of those trees. But the interesting part about this tune that I think is relevant to what we've been talking about so far is the way that that tune is kind of evolved in meaning, and the way that you recontextualize things as you keep listening to them, like both as a fan or as an artist. I mean, like I said, I got married in that arboretum, actually, because when I wrote it, I was like really quite heartbroken about a different thing. And in order to sort of like put my money where my mouth is, getting married there was an ode to wanting to continue growing with someone I care about a lot, my wife, Caroline. Shout out to her.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
Shout out, Caroline.
But while we were on the Strangers I Used to Love tour, my mom's mom, my grandmama, got quite sick, and all she really wanted to do was make it to that wedding. She had broken her leg and was like, I'm going to learn to walk again to get out of here so that I can go to this wedding, and did not make it. She passed away a few weeks beforehand. And so my mom had a tree planted for my grandmama in this very same arboretum. And often on stage, I sort of dedicate it to her or to Caroline or to someone who's meaningful at the time. But I think the relevant thing about this is like, What's that like idiom where it's like, okay, you know, you're 30 now, but you're also still 25, and you're also still 16.
I talk about this all the time.
Oh, see, okay, we have a lot of shared experiences. This is perfect.
You get what I'm saying.
You get what I'm saying.
Like you're older. This, like your 17 yourself, your old self is still in you.
Yeah, you really do grow around all of these parts of yourself as opposed to out of them. And one interesting quote about recording when we were recording Until Tomorrow that Rob Baker left me with that I use a lot is about how a recording of a tune is just like a snapshot of any given tune.
Yeah.
And every time we play this song live, I find something new to feel about it. You were both at this show at the Horseshoe, but what I mentioned there was that I used to call my grandmama every time I was at the Horseshoe.
Yeah.
She used to go party there in the 60s. She was a nurse. And, we'd have the same conversation every time. I'd be like, hey, I'm at the Shoe. And she'd be like, oh, I spent so much time there. And I'd be like, I know. And she'd be like, I'm proud of you. And I'd be like, thank you. And I didn't get to call her this time, right? So it's like, I guess it's a tune about coming to terms with your relationship with death, which is a good thing to be talking about for the last two Wilderness shows. Welcome. I would say get tickets, but they're sold out, so you cannot come to our funeral. It's already packed. Any further questions? No. Okay, thank you.
Sold out funeral.
For the record, I did send this to the people at the arboretum, and they cried about it. And I've since been asked to play this at an actual funeral. So hey, you know, we're complicated feelings. This complicated feelings that we are coming to terms with the inevitability of decomposing.
Okay? Yeah. well, everyone that I know who we have sort of made fans of the band around us, like our friends, everyone that I know has a different story of why they relate to this song. Like my best friend Austin, who goes to University of Guelph, he was at your Guelph show, has a very deep connection to this song because he would spend a lot of time in the Arboretum every day in his first year. And then I got to visit the Arboretum. I have a connection to it because it's a very, like, in a weird way, like coming to terms with death when you live in Ontario. Song. In a very specific way.
Oh,
it
boy.
Is so odd. But do you understand what I'm talking about?
Oh, boy, do I. Yeah.
Because it is specifically the line that gets me every time is
tear me down. Yeah, which is my favorite line.
It's both of our favorite lines. Tear me down to build condos and I'll finally see Toronto. As two artists who is like, Toronto is the goal for artists, right? And it's so unattainable. Congratulations, Abby. You've sort of attained that. unattainable is like that line breaks us down.
Yeah.
And then so many other people have so many different relations to this song. And it's, I mean, you see at the live shows, like, everyone's a mess.
I don't, because I'm also crying. That's the problem. This, again, I'll let you play the tune, but I will say this before we play it. When we played this tune in Toronto, I didn't realize that line was in the song. I know I wrote it, but like,
yeah.
the whole bit about like, oh, I'll build a house for your grandchildren to live in. But that wasn't about my grandmother until my grandmother died.
Yeah.
And then when I was playing that at the Shoe, I nearly keeled over. There's a video of this somewhere of me like realizing this and then becoming devastatingly sad. Yeah. So enjoy, whoever's listening to this. I'm sorry.
The Arboretum.
When I meet my end, bury me in the Arboretum so I can grow into something stronger than I was. I can stand tall among my brothers, no different from all the others, and I can grow as old as I should have with you, love.
Arboretum there. Okay, enough crying. Oh. We're done. No more crying for today.
Says you, it's fine.
I'm kidding, we can cry a little bit if you want. The next song that we have to talk about, Hollywood Boulevard. Okay. We're sticking with Strangers I Used to Love. Hollywood Boulevard, as we mentioned at the top of this lengthy hour and a half, is the first Wilderness song that Abby and I ever heard.
Correct.
We heard it live at the Isabel. And I don't know, Abby, take it away. We have things to talk about with this song.
Cool, I'm listening.
Well, what we were going to use Hollywood Boulevard to sort of talk about because of its content and then how we've sort of told, like, the whole story sort of comes full circle a little bit with Hollywood Boulevard, getting to hear it released now on Strangers I Used to Love. We wondered if you had any sort of short stories or anything you wanted to talk about specifically with the tour.
The Strangers I Used to Love
the
tour.
The Strangers I Used to Love tour.
Oh,
okay. That was a big one for you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do I have short stories? Jesus, I don't know.
Well, okay. Yeah, because of course that's opening a big can of worms, I'm sure.
Doors. We're going to tell whoever's in here next, go home. We're going to brew a pot of coffee. No, but so I'll say this about this tune, and then I'll talk about touring. Like, this tune damn near did not make the record.
Wow!
Because it feels like such an outlier, and I personally love it for that reason. Again, I'm a guy who likes weird stuff. But, like, when we were recording this, we were like, oh, this is, like, supposed to be campy and kitschy.
Yeah.
And Jonas's words for the backing vocals were like, I want the muses from Hercules on this. And I was like, let's make that happen. Right? It's like, it's full of this cheesy rock star baloney.
Yeah.
Baloney. and the funny thing about this tune that you mentioned, which is a good segue to talking about touring, is, like, playing the live show, we get to be a little bit extra. We get to cosplay as rock stars, which is what we've been doing the whole time. And this tune is sort of like about those expectations, right? We've been a DIY band for a long time. We've had a couple of independent managers in spots, but we've never had an agent. We've never had, like, most of the accoutrement that you hear about in the stories of old, listening to, you know, biographies of Kiss or Motley Crue or whatever. And we're also way, way, way less into drugs. for the record, we can put a few beers away, but, like,
a few? A million beers.
Citation needed. the thing about this tune, like I said, it's this parody of, like, the rock star ethos, I guess. And we get to like cosplay with that a little bit. And the funny part about the Strangers tour is that it was so feast or famine that it's almost as if, like, if you could spend the sheer amount of hours doing nothing on a highway in the middle of nowhere in an RV that was full of 8 people and very stinky and very disorganized, like, you would have a very interesting portrait of, like, what went into writing this song, because those moments, like, for an hour and 50 minutes or whatever, you're on stage and you're pouring it out and you're like, okay, finally, this is the moment. For every hour that we do that, we would be driving for 12. And for every hour that we got to do that, we had put in months of time ahead of time to book the dang tour ourselves, to figure out how to do the release ourselves, to learn all of the stuff that we were supposed to do for the release and inevitably screw it up and only figure it out after. Like, we, you know, I did the graphic design. I'm not a graphic designer. I asked my wife, who is a graphic designer, a lot of questions. My handwriting's all over the thing. I must have spent days agonizing about my handwriting as if I was a second grader, being like, is this record going to flop? And are we going to have spent the last 3 years working on this dang thing? Because I can't make my writing look good on a computer. Like, it was one of the most Herculean tasks we've ever embarked on. Writing that record, picking up the pieces after COVID, like we were talking about earlier, finding a way to, like, actually just get back in a room together and not let the band be murdered by the pandemic. Like I said, booking the tour ourselves. I'm going to shout out our keyboardist, Liam, who's been, like, our lead booker and our lead tour manager for most of the time. I say that we've never had an agent, quote, but he's a darn good one.
Shout out Liam.
You know, like, going on that tour, even, this is actually a very good example before we play this tune. That night when we did the album release show at Blue Martini, we had, like, a good 500 people in there. If you're a fire marshal who's listening, don't.
No, we didn't.
They're at Chuck's Roadhouse now. Go shut them down. you know, like, it was one of the best nights of my life. It was packed. It was amazing. It was, like, just electric. It's hard to describe. And then, you know, a couple days later, after driving for those couple days, we were in Winnipeg playing to 7 people, right? Yeah, and it's like, if you want to have another in-depth chat about music marketing and the challenges of being an indie band who is going on tour in a very big country, that's a whole other segment. Call me back. We'll talk about it. But, like, the thing, like I said, the thing about this tune is, like, it stands for that contrast. It is like, we are taking the rock star baloney and dialing it up to a million on purpose. And for that reason, it's actually one of my favorite songs to play. But it's some stark contrast with other, you know, more emotional tunes. Like, this is where we're really playing the characters that I think we idolized for a while and then stopped, I suppose. Does that help?
Oh, that's brilliant to hear you say that, because that's exactly how I've interpreted it.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful. And that's great that you were able to use it to tell that story of what you just said, the feast and famine, because a lot of people don't know that that's really what it's like. And it's not Hollywood Boulevard. It's not, just deciding to pick up a guitar and making it. It's putting in the work, but you're putting in the work because you care so much about it.
Totally.
And I think this quickly relates. I'll share this quickly because we didn't get a chance to talk about it yet. This is Abby and my favorite Wilderness song. Like, hands down, it's this.
Huh. More musical theater then.
But I think it's because we have a long relationship with rock music and what is a rock star and that sort of thing. But we were absolutely blown away by the album Strangers I Used to Love when it came out. We listened to a lot of music, but a lot of Canadian music. And that was this is one of the best albums I've ever heard come out of Canada. It was, I think, my third favorite album of last year, behind Charlie XCX's Brat. Like, it was like...
Fine.
It was one of the best albums that we had ever heard. And I remember us talking, like, very seriously about this album, because we liked it so much and we cared about it so much. We were like, this is it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is going to get the Wilderness, like, to be something bigger than what you are now, which we were never obviously unhappy with you being a small band, obviously, but it was like, you clearly had aspirations to be something bigger, and you could sort of see that in how hard you were working on that tour and how hard you were working on that album. And forever, we were always talking about, this is it for them. Like, this is the album that people are going to talk about, being like, that's where they broke out. And I don't know, it's just...
it's, nice. You got sound effects on that board? You got a little air horn?
I'm joking. But,
continue, I'm sorry.
But it's... Yeah, I don't know. It's been an interesting journey as a fan, catching you so late in the band's life, especially... seeing, like, one of the best albums you've ever heard come out and just nothing really happening. And that's not a diss to the band.
Oh, no.
It's how hard it is and how big it really is out there.
And a cultural, and we were talking about this on the long drive here from Toronto, a part of a bigger cultural shift as well in the music scene and how hard it is to make music now. And we just commend you guys for trying, even though that thing that you were aspiring to didn't happen.
Here's what I'm going to say to that. I implore you to play this tune, but it's because I need to, I want to think really thoroughly about what I want to say in the last 8 minutes of this, because I think you touched upon some really important subjects. So, dear listener, this is Hollywood Boulevard by us, the Wilderness. We're going to talk about feelings afterward. Goddamn.
7, the world will wake up to the news. They'll say that's too bad, I don't understand why he was taken from us too soon. I wanna die like you.
Hollywood Boulevard there by The Wilderness. And we're almost at the end. I was just about to say to Nick,
at the end.
I have to start this next song at 50. Nope. Yeah, 54.
Perfect.
So you have until 50. You have 7 minutes.
Oh, grand. Okay. any questions or should I just yap?
Just go for it. Say your piece.
Okay, dear listener. What you're about to hear, I'm sorry, I'm talking like Lady Whistle down here.
That's
like,
what I was thinking.
Dear precious reader, this is the last song we're going to release for the foreseeable future, possibly ever. We're going to play a tune called Complicated Feeling, and we wrote Complicated Feeling after we tried to go on tour, which is usually the thing that makes us feel better, and did not successfully go on tour. If you come to one of our shows, you'll hear the full story. But the long and short of it is that we tried a good 3 times to leave for what was supposed to be the first show of this tour. Each of them had to get canceled for a variety of reasons.
And this is, just for my own clarification, this is the time that you hit the bus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very, very gingerly, but nonetheless enough to scare the hell out of everybody on board. Nobody was hurt. Nobody's injured. Like, we, very, very not dramatic, but... The thing that we're doing with these last couple shows, we're kind of trying to stick the landing and give ourselves a break and some space. And it feels weird for me to be in charge of this question. Normally I'm being interrogated about it. This tune, I don't know if we thought this was going to be our last tune, but it sort of has turned out to be. And when we were talking about Hollywood Boulevard earlier, we were talking about like the sort of rock star mythos and like getting to be grandiose and be like a big personality on stage and all of that. And then off mic, we were also talking about like sort of the nitty gritty realities of working as a musician in 2025, which is largely like, you know, absconding on your rent and like figuring out how to also be an agent and also be a booker and also be a manager and also be a sync person and also figure out how to work your day job and also get enough sleep and also not hate everybody. And one of the guiding principles of The Wilderness the entire time we've been a band is that we have always been very close friends, right? We talk about this very frequently on stage, that we've been chasing this dream together because it's something that we all shared. We touched on this earlier when we were talking about the shared experience of a live show with the listener, right? Yeah. Like something about us out of necessity contextualizing our own personal experiences. Other people share those experiences. And right now there's like so many things that stand in the way of artists, of young people, of anybody who's alive right now. And the reason we're doing this is to try and just focus on being friends, as opposed to being business partners, as opposed to being coworkers, as opposed to being any of those things. Because if you don't have that, then you're doing a job. And I have utter respect for the craft. I think you have to do the job. I actually will live and die by that. I think you have to be professional. I think you've got to know your stuff. I think you've got to do the job well. But we've always been a band who's doing it for the love of the game, and lately it's been harder and harder to find that. And what I want anybody listening to this tune to know is that sharing these tunes with y'all, especially live, has been one of the greatest privileges that I've ever known. I'm sure anybody in the band would corroborate that. I'm sure anybody attending these last shows will hear it.
Yeah.
because it has helped at least me, I think the other guys too, but I'll speak for myself on this one, just helped me feel a lot more human, knowing that there are other people out there who connect with the same kind of experience. I wish this were more of a protest song. I wish this were like raging against the light and not going gently into it. I wish this were setting us up for a grand comeback and that this was like an elaborate bit to trick you all into being very sad, which would be a very rock and roll thing to do. It's not.
Yeah.
We are coming to terms with our relationship with death, and only because of that do I think, hopefully, maybe, we'll get the opportunity to keep growing. I genuinely don't know. I have no idea. I don't have a happy ending for this one. But I do know that we're going to play our asses off tomorrow and on Friday. I was hoping I'd have a good thesis statement for this. I don't. I want the people listening to hear the tune. And I want to express my like utter gratitude to you both. I mean, for having me here on the program, but also for being such exemplary pillars of a music community, which for all of its ups and downs, which will be a different episode, an episode worth having, there are some very dedicated people here. There are some very, very dedicated people here. There's some very welcoming people here. There are some very committed people here. And if for no other reason, like I said, I think at the very beginning of this show, that's why I moved here and that's why I'm still here. So, shout out to you. I'm sorry that this song is so sad.
It's okay. Well, that was a great eulogy. That was perfect.
Thanks.
If tomorrow's a funeral, then well, thank you for coming on. And this has been sort of a dream for Abby and I. And thanks for trying not to cry.
Oh, don't you worry. There will be many, many people crying.
Thank you. As you just said, thanks to us, but thank you and extend our gratitude to the rest of the band, of course, for everything that you do. Because as you just said, it's, you know, it was one of the greatest moments of your life, as you just said. Well, it was one of the greatest moments of our life to be able to experience you live and, you know, be on this part of the journey with you. Yeah. So bouncing that thank you right back to you, and it's much appreciated.
Yeah, I don't know. The Wilderness as a concept has meant so much to the two of us, and I've made so many great memories at shows and with your music as a soundtrack. And very excited for the next two shows, but very upset. but upset in a happy way of like, I'm glad that you guys are recognizing that it's not working and that you need to focus on the relationship between yourselves, which is something that as a, I would say a big fan, but you might, I don't know. is something that's very comforting to hear.
Of course.
Because we, not too parasocially, but we care about you as people, right? You're not just music machines for us.
Exactly.
It's very nice to hear that you are recognizing that something isn't right.
Yeah, we'll talk more. Thank you for having me in. Men, be good to your fellow men. Read some bell hooks, take in some feminism, talk about your emotions, try not to curse on the radio. This is a song called Complicated Feeling. You're listening to CFRC 101.9. My name's Nicholas Lennox. I play saxophone in this band. Rest in peace, us.
This has been Skylar and Abby of Sky's the Limit, Sky's the Limit and the Wilderness forever.
Something good. Harper, host of Phase Radio, airing on CFRC 101.9 FM every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m., where we'll lean into all our different phases. Happy, sad, anxious, angsty, angry, and excited. Tune in each week as we revisit past mistakes, explore dreamy adventures, and embrace current moods with a variety of indie rock tunes.
Can be hard to understand, but this one isn't. Nearly 1 in 4 people can't afford food in Canada. What does food insecurity look like where you live? Look up your address at foodsecuritynow.ca. That's foodsecuritynow.ca. Join Community Food Centers Canada in making a difference today.
Hey, this is Laura Jane Grace from Against Me, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.